Great to have you with us here on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. Time to take a look at the world of insects with our guest entomologist, Phil Pelletieri. And we can talk about all kinds of insects on the show today. Maybe box elder bugs or Asian lady beetles or stink bugs. All kinds of things to deal with. Phil's a distinguished faculty associate emeritus at UW-Madison. He retired as head of the UW-Madison Insect Diagnostic Lab in 2014. Been a guest with us for many years, and it's always fun to have him with us. And I hope you'll join in with your questions for Phil. Tell us maybe how you make your firewood free of critters, or what are your home remedies for dealing with infestations. Join the conversation. Give a call. The number's 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Love to hear from you. Phil Pelletieri, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
Nice to be here. How are you doing, Larry?
I'm doing well. I was thinking about the fact that my fireplace is gas, and I do not have firewood. And somebody asked me about, or was commenting about, insects that came in with their firewood. And I said, I don't have that problem. But what about insects and firewood? How do you keep them out?
Yeah, I mean, the problem is most of the trees we cut down are dead and dying, and often they have critters in them to begin with. And then if you store the wood inside or it warms up, the insects wake up and emerge. Now, the good news is most of that stuff is just nuisance-type critters. In some very well-seasoned firewood, there could be powder post beetles, but I generally don't see that. The problem is, if you knew this was coming, what I would suggest in the summer is to tarp the firewood to get it to heat up to a point that it would probably both drop the moisture and often kill the insects right there. But, you know, it's kind of a good rule of thumb to bring in maybe a week's worth or so, if possible, or less. Now, I've said that to people way up north, and they laugh at me because, as you know, if the snow gets deep and whatnot, it makes life problematic. So I said, the good news is it's mostly a nuisance problem, but you do got to be careful because, as I said, the kind of wood that we're harvesting for firewood is exactly the kind of wood that would have, especially beetles, sometimes carpenter ants, and sometimes just a few critters hiding under the bark to spend the winter.
Yeah. Well, Joe in Two Harbors, Minnesota, already has a question for you, so let's go there. Hi, Joe.
Good morning, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have taken Dr. Pelletieri's advice over the previous years, and it's been great for cluster flies. So I've always sprayed in late August with bifenthrin, and then in the spring I've had no emergence. However, in the last 2 years, I've still come back to my cabin and found cluster flies. And this year, I sprayed very conscientiously, and it was kind of cool. And as you know, we suddenly had a warm spell here about a week ago.
Yeah.
And they all came out again. And my question is, am I doing something wrong? And should I be using something other than bifenthrin? But it's the only thing that I can find. It's in an ortho product called Home Defense.
Yeah.
What does the good doctor think?
Okay, so your timing is good. I mean, the problem with fall critters is that different ones come in at different times. And cluster flies tend to be end of August, beginning September, whereas Asian lady beetles we might not see until you have a hard freeze, so it could even be a couple weeks from now. All the chemicals that we're using right now for outdoor control are bifenthrin or bifenthrin's first cousins. They're all synthetic pyrethroids. The one thing that is a little frustrating when you go to the hardware store is the chemicals you buy could be the same chemical, but they're formulated somewhat differently than the ones that the pest control companies would use. They tend to get products that have extended outdoor life. They're microencapsulated or formulated in a different way. Now, you can get those products, but you have to chase them down. You usually will not find those at the hardware store. You have to go and order them on these do-your-own pest control sites and those kind of things. And so it's the same chemicals that the professionals would use. The only difference is, again, is how well they stick. And so that is a partial concern. The other thing, though, is, you know, I think your window is as good as it could be, but what might explain part of it is that some of the cluster flies might have already moved into the cracks and crevices before you treated. And then, that's the frustration. When critters get into wall voids and attics and whatever, they're really not worth trying to spray because you can't get to them. That's a little bit of a long shot because, like I said, everything else you're telling me is pretty good, and especially since you had success with the bifenthrin that you used before. But as I said, if I had to buy something, I would purposely look for something that has a longer life. And then with cluster flies, you know, it's always high, you know, overhangs, cracks around windows and the like. I really don't worry about them sneaking in at ground level because that is not their behavior. They usually sit on the sides of the building when it warms up, and then they crawl upwards, and that's what gets them underneath the seams and stuff and gets us into the structure.
Yeah. Joe, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's turn to Cheryl in Mount Horeb next. Hi, Cheryl.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm calling with a question about ground bees.
Okay.
I've been doing some fall cleanup, and I wasn't aware there was a ground bee nest in one of the beds, and they were attacking. So I would be interested in knowing how I can eradicate that nest. Thank you.
Two things. Sorting through. Bumblebees will nest in the ground. You know, those are the dark, fuzzy, yellow, and black critters. What a lot of people call ground bees are usually paper wasps and yellow jackets that nest in the ground in similar kind of structures as the bumblebees. The thing about the yellow jackets is they're going to be done very quickly. They freeze out. The only way they survive is the new queens go crawl under a rock somewhere and spend the winter and start everything from scratch. And usually when we get it around the 1st of November, it's kind of the shutoff date. Now, if you had to do something, because you just got to work in that part of the garden for now and the like. And the first thing is if you could pick cool mornings, and when we start getting cool mornings, they shouldn't really be active below 40 degrees. So that sometimes helps. But for treating ground nests, I'm much more of a proponent of using a dust rather than a spray. What has been quite frustrating to me is back in the day, all the years that I ran the lab, if you were to call me, I'd say there's a carbaryl dust, typically sold under the name 7, that really works quite well for this. The problem now is if you go buy 7 at the hardware store, it's not carbaryl, it's a different chemical, which does not work quite as well, and I can speak to that from my own attempts of trying to use it. But still, dusts are better than anything else. And one of the things you can consider, because the colony's got to be quite weak right now, you might even be able to just bury it without even treating it. When they're really strong and there's a couple thousand individuals, they can kind of dig their way out of things. But they've been in decline. Food is in short supply. And as I said, the colonies kind of die out from starvation, among other things. So I said, you might just consider getting some dirt. A cool morning would be a good time to treat it, or right at dusk, and pack it in a little bit, and then maybe if that will solve it. If it's bumblebees, I'd say leave them alone. They are not aggressive. What you find with bumblebee nests, you can work around them and they won't bother you. But they're also in decline now. It's late enough. In fact, some bumblebees basically have been gone for a good 4 or 5 weeks now because they end their populations in September. Even the ones that hang on now, I do see quite a bit of bumblebee activity in my backyard. But I don't get too concerned. But again, if you really had to, I think filling the nest would work.
All right. There you go. Thank you so much for calling. You can join in too, 800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. Jeff emailed us. Jeff's neighbor has vinyl cedar shake siding on the rear of their home. This time of year, box elderbugs seem to crawl out from under the siding panels. How can this be stopped or treated?
Well, box elderbugs open a couple extra doors for us. One of the nice things is that they are susceptible to soap sprays. The limitation of soap sprays is if the box elderbugs are out when you spray them, they're dead. but if they're hiding under the siding and walk out 20 minutes later, they're not. Versus the chemicals, like we spoke earlier for cluster flies, the outdoor chemicals that are all synthetic pyrethroids, usually have anywhere from 5 days to 2 months worth of residual. So if you go through the bother of spraying those, I'm a little interested. Generally, box elder bugs are a native critter. They usually do better in dry late summers. The reason for that, there's a fungus disease that naturally controls them if it's wet. Now, in the southern part of the state, we have been really quite dry for the last 5 or 6 weeks, but we were wet earlier. I have not seen a lot of them in my wanderings around, but that does not mean that they're not hot spots elsewhere. And again, what you're witnessing is exactly what they do. They crawl underneath things. If it finally gets cold, they stay there. But if it warms up, they kind of wake up and move around again. If they are not finding the way into the structure, that tells me that the walls are sealed quite well, which is good. And then it's just an outside nuisance. Where it gets to be problematic is if they can crawl into the wall voids and then they show up through light fixtures and stuff. And just like all these fall invading critters get to be a nuisance all winter long. But the window of them coming in is always September and October for most of them.
There you go. Patty in Barneville has a question or a comment. Let's go there. Hi, Patty.
Hi. I have a raspberry patch, and they're the fall variety, and I can hardly pick them because they're so full of bees, and I think it's a honeybee. And is there anything I can do to stop them from eating all of the berries? I did put sugar water in my bird bath, and some go there, but they are a nuisance, and they sting when you're trying to pick them, and yeah, they're pretty aggressive right now.
I would be suspicious more that they're yellow jackets of one sort or another, because honeybees typically look for the nectar of flowers. They're not interested in overly ripe fruit. But the thing about yellow jackets is they have a fondness for both protein and sugar and the high sugar content of the berries. So that's not unusual. And it really is a problem because even if I could come up with a magic spray, any magic spray you use has a harvest restriction, depending on the thing, anywhere from a day to 4 or 5 days. So you can't even get out there. One of the things that we would suggest to folks is to do some sanitation, that stuff that's too ripe or whatnot, still get it out of the garden, because anything that's sitting there is drawing them. But the problem has been is that they know there's food there. They can communicate to their nest mates that there's food there, and they are really quite problematic. Again, one of the tricks you might consider is as it cools down, the few days you got left to pick is pick the cool mornings where you can go out and pick before they show up. Once it gets above 50 degrees and the like, then their activity is really going to peak. But again, I think the good news to some degree is that we're getting late enough. This can't go on for more than another week or two. It just, as I said, we're at the end of their cycle. But you can see that there isn't a lot of food out there for them, so that's why they're so desperate to attack this ripe fruit.
Yeah. Patty, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Phil Pelletieri, our entomologist, a guest today, and you can join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email the talk at WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you along today on WPR News. Just a quick note, at the top of the hour today at noon, we'll be talking about spiders. Have you been seeing more spiders lately? Well, it's their mating season, and we'll learn more about the life of spiders and how they choose their mate starting at noon today. But right now, Phil Pelletieri talking generally about insects. We've got creepy crawlies in some homes. Fall's the time for that to happen. And we have lots of callers online already, Phil. And Sandy in Eau Claire has a question, I believe, about wasps. Let's go there. Hi, Sandy.
Hello there. Say, this is an off-season wasp question, but our house is just a couple years old, and we have a deck that comes out off the second level. And the wasps have, we watch them fly, and we know they're, you know, in down between the boards. So we know they're housing or something in there. And at, you know, times we'll spray, and they come up and, you know, just die right out on the deck. But we're looking at a way to maybe prevent them from deciding to take up a residence in there in the first place and be a little proactive next summer.
So they're under the the deck?
Yeah, you know. Yeah, well, it's a raised deck. It's on the second level.
I got
it. And they're in between the boards. So if we go down below and look up, we can't see them because there's one level of boards, and then there's, you know, some space. And then when we see them go down from the top, and they're when we spray, you know, it's just kind of hard to know where to spray even. You know, they just kind of crawl up from all over.
So at a given time, if you were sitting there just kind of quietly and watching, do you notice a lot of activity, like lots of critters going into a certain area? Or what I might suggest is we got to pinpoint this a little bit more. I'm not sure if these are paper wasps that have found a void, and so we have a big nest with a lot of critters as things go on, or are these the small umbrella wasp type things, you know, Polistes is what I know them as, that make those little tiny nests, maybe about the size of a 2 inches in diameter. And they often will be on overhangs and underneath things, but you would think that would be visible to you. What I'm fishing for is if they're crawling up underneath something, that would be what you want to take advantage of again. And you don't have to spray the outer surfaces. You spray up into those cracks and crevices, or you can dust into the cracks and crevices, or you can seal the cracks and crevices. I mean, there's got to be some physical opening that they're utilizing. The thing about sealing things is it really is a permanent solution. One of the things, you know, I have known in my career some people that are just fantastic at figuring out how to build critters out, but it's not a talent that everybody has. And you know, so it's kind of sit and watch, observe, see if you can have the insects give you a hint that might make it, again, a more permanent solution, because there's got to be a way they're weaseling through. And the other thing is treatments. Most of these things start with queens in May. And so treating in the spring when things are just getting started usually is the most effective, whereas you get later in the season, the numbers go up and things get a little bit more difficult to keep under control.
Yeah, and on a deck, you probably got little spaces between boards.
Yeah, but, you know, there's got to be some kind of void space.
Yeah,
that they're making, as I said, you know, you can really call these all paper wasps because the ones that make the little umbrella wasps still use the same kind of carton. It's just the sheer numbers of critters. You have 40 in a colony for one. You have 3,000 in the colony of a different species, that kind of thing.
Sandy, there you go. Thank you for calling. David in St. Croix County will turn to you now. Hi, David.
Hey, say, I was wondering if you could talk about the life cycle of deer flies. It is interesting the time they come out and then the time they leave and their habits of they can just be relentless on you. But once they get into a vehicle, they don't pay attention to you at all. They just want out, whereas a mosquito will just go for you all the time.
Yeah. So we have, honestly, over 24 different species of deer and horse flies in the state. The cycle is pretty much the same. Their maggots are predators usually in lowlands and wet, swampy ground where they feed on critters in the ground. The adults come out, and the adults are extremely visual creatures, and so they tend to patrol, and they are attracted to movement. And so some people might notice sometimes that you're driving your car down a lane and whatnot, and you look behind you, there's this cloud of deer flies because they're seeing the movement that's coming about. Unlike mosquitoes that are using more chemical senses like carbon dioxide and the like to find their host, these things are looking for visual stuff. But because of where they breed, it's a problem because you can have deer flies in you know, on your lake property that I can point a half a mile down the road where the source is, and you really can't do anything about the source. So it's not as if there's a magic there. You keep things covered. There used to be, and I don't know if it's still on the market, there was a retired engineer from Evinrude in the state that investigated that the USDA had played around with deer fly traps. And they're basically, if you think of a dark ball hanging from a tripod, and the movement of that dark ball attracts the deer flies, and then they put a cone on the top. So when they flew up to go towards the light, they got captured in there. And what he found is in certain circumstances, you could put these up and you could really reduce the number. In fact, the reason he got into this is his wife liked horses. The horses would be bothered and, of course, can even be dangerous with the horses bolting because of horse flies coming after them. and he would put these out in the pasture and catch lots of horse flies and deer flies. So there are some traps, they're not guaranteed to work, but in some circumstances they can help reduce the numbers. There's also a cute little design of a little sticky trap that you put on your hat, and when the deer fly lands on your hat, it gets caught. Treadknot was one that was sold. I've seen some other ones in catalogs and whatnot as a way of at least helping a bit. But you're right. The interesting thing is when you get them a confined situation, they don't like to come in, first of all. That's not their nature. And when they do, they're interested in going out. They're not interested in feeding at all.
David, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. I was looking, and I think there might still be that item that you were talking about, Phil.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me that somebody has picked up the idea, because as I said, it was well researched by USDA, and you know, it's a non-toxic way of reducing the numbers, realizing that you're kind of dealing with the ones that are patrolling the area where you've got the trap. That's the best you can do.
Jerry in Windsor, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Jerry.
Hi. I just wanted to mention that we've had great success knocking down the box elder population, sprinkling a bit of diatomaceous earth. It kills them right off. It's pretty innocuous and very inexpensive.
Yeah, if you use it right. You know, so the whole thing about diatomaceous earth is you've got to get it into places where the critters like to hide. It works as an abrasive. It's kind of like natural sandpaper. And what it does is it wears off the outer protective wax on an insect, which makes it susceptible to drying out and other things. And it's semi-permanent. It's even to the point that they use diatomaceous earth, or there's a synthetic version called silica aerogel, that in some houses in California, they would put it into the wall voids to make them insect-proof, because any critter that was foolish enough to get in there would be taken care of. And other than, you know, you don't want to breathe large amounts of this dust. It's like any dust is not good for you. But it is a real interesting way if you understand how it works. Now, people who put diatomaceous earth out on their broccoli to kill the green worms doesn't work so well because it just brushes off. It doesn't force itself on the insect in a way that causes the kind of skin abrasion. But if you've got a confined space, it is extremely effective.
Jerry, thanks much for calling. And let's turn to Karen in Oregon. Hi, Karen. Karen, are you there?
Yes, I am.
What's on your mind?
So I have these little black spots on the left side. And the neighbors think I've only been there for months.
You're breaking up, but I think I've got the gist of it. Karen has, because this happened to me when I had a lake home, Karen has a light-sided house, and on the house are black dots.
Okay, so it could be one of two things, and we got to sort it through because the direction is somewhat different. It is true that spiders and other insects at times can waste, even box elder bugs, honestly have kind of a liquid, darkish waste that almost comes on like varnish and dries. So you get some staining. But I'll be honest with you, most of the time when I see little black spots on the sides of houses, instead of being insect-related, they are from something called artillery fungus. It's a fungus that grows on wood chips and the like, and as its name implies, it shoots its spores, and they're sticky, and they're dark, and they stick, and they are very difficult to get off. Now, where you find the spots, if it's the pattern all around your security light, then it's, you know, spiders and critters related, and we can deal with that. You know, one of the arguments that we use sometimes is rather than putting the security light on a building and attracting the critters there, you put the security light on a pole, you shine it on the house, but then all the critters go out to the pole. So that's one thought. The artillery fungus gets a little more difficult. Again, it might be worth doing a little bit of a search on the internet. I have seen people come up with solutions that supposedly help getting it off, although I haven't been overly impressed when I've tried that. Some of it sometimes is you have to take the mulch off away from areas so that you don't get any more of this fungus. So, as I said, the pattern that you've got, if they're totally surround the house, I'm suspicious it's artillery fungus. If it's very localized, especially around windows and other things that have light at night that could attract insects, then it might be critter-related.
Karen, thank you very much for calling, and good luck. Appreciate it. Doug in Madison, your turn. Hi, Doug.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yes, go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call. This is kind of a crossover hybrid call. I know you're not an ornithologist, you're an entomologist, but I think there's some connection possibly here. My family members have a home that has wood siding, and they're getting woodpeckers that are building cavities this time of year. I told them they couldn't be nesting. They don't nest this time of year. It must be insects under their siding, but they're not seeing any insects. So they got a permit. They've killed like 3 downy woodpeckers. I'm not a fan of that, and they want to do more. But I was wondering what signs could be that they're so deep that you wouldn't actually see like the box elders or the ladybird beetles under the siding.
The most common problem that I see related to woodpeckers and insects is honestly solitary bees. And in particular, cedar siding, some of it, we had notorious problems. And what gives it away is the pattern. Is, you know, if you see lines of woodpecker holes, and they're pretty predictable along there, what we found out, and I know Dr. Craven and I and others have pondered on this one, is that when they make certain kinds of siding, there are little straw-like holes on the bottom that are the artifact of making the stuff. These kinds of bees literally use straw-like devices in nature for their nests. So they're putting pollen in or whatever they're after. They put their eggs in there and their grubs develop, and that's what the woodpeckers are after. You know, woodpeckers normally in trees are after the grubs of various kinds of beetles, but the wood on the siding of the house is too dry to be suitable for beetle breeding, but it is the leafcutter bees and there's some other critters. There's some other wasps that I could see doing this. So they said the pattern would be. So now, if indeed that's the case, if you look from the bottom of the siding and look up and see where those holes are, I know this sounds tedious, but to go through and plug all those so that the insects can't get there, if the insects can't get there, the woodpeckers will stop bothering it. So if it is insect-related, that's what I historically had seen quite a bit. We literally even talked to the manufacturers about this but we were told that really they couldn't stop that from happening, you know, having those environments that my bees would try to take advantage of.
So what would you, I'm trying to think of the easy way, some kind of a little foam injection or?
Yeah, or, you know, a little putty. I mean, they aren't very big holes, you know, and you know, the trouble is, though, is you've got to go along every board, you know, and come from the underside, and that's what you're looking for. And as I said, the giveaway will be the pattern of the holes. If you know, it's classically in a line. Because, again, the hole goes up, the grubs are in a line, and that's what the woodpeckers are taking advantage of.
All right. Doug, there you go. Thank you very much for calling. Gary in Ladysmith, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Gary.
Hi. I know you talked about post-powdered beetles earlier, but I had a few more questions. What conditions make them go dormant, and how long do I have if I bring the firewood inside before they would emerge, if they do?
So the difficult thing is that there's a lot of other bark beetles that make little small holes and make sawdust and the like. What you typically find is that wood in the first 2 years of cutting have this first wave of critters, and it doesn't have powder post beetle. Where I get the powder post beetle complaints are people that saw their own raw lumber or the like, or use logs for construction. And, you know, they store it in a barn for 3 or 4 years, and then they use it for whatever in building, and now I've got the insects coming out of the flooring and the like. So they're in well-seasoned wood. There's a group of them that attack softwoods. There's a group of them that attack hardwoods, especially the old, bigger vessel woods like oak and ash and the like. So I'm not overly concerned for powder post beetle. And then the other argument in your favor that you will not have a problem is that they need rough lumber to attack. Now, they can attack it 30 years later. Their success will depend on the moisture and the starch content of the wood. But anything that is painted, sealed, varnished, or the like, before they get there, they can't get in because they have to lay their eggs in open vessels. Now, the problem with rough sod type stuff that isn't sealed, they can come on to it. The other interesting thing is powder post beetles you see in barns, you see in unheated cabins quite successful. You don't see them in year-round structures really very often because we dry our wood out so much. But you don't get that drying effect in an unheated barn or an unheated cabin, or when it's only heated, you know, a week, a year in the winter type of thing. And there are treatments for that. So I'd be careful. And the other thing that will sometimes help you in determining, so when you cut a log and you see holes in it, most of the time you cut them at kind of an angle, so they're kind of oval or the like. Powder post beetle, when you see them come out of wood, it is a round BB hole right at you because they're coming out with the grain of the wood. So sometimes you can read that into it of which it would be. But the good news is that powder post beetles, I mean, they're frustrating if you put a new floor and they come out of the wood and the like. But generally speaking, they're a relatively minor problem, except in unheating cabins, especially log cabins sometimes the problem is that the wood needs to be resealed and refinished in a way so that we keep the critters out.
Gary, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Natalie and Toma emailed us. They have a one-inch segmented crawling worm-type critters that appear every fall in Natalie's garage. They curl into kind of a circular shape and crunch when stepped on. She wonders what they are and how to get rid of them.
Okay, so they're millipedes, and millipedes are a soil creature, and they spend most of their time, but they go through a migratory phase, and they can crawl a long ways. And so where your house is situated, so they're crawling around at night, and what happens when the sun comes up, they're looking for places that are cool and damp. So they'll congregate on the north side of the house, but they also commonly congregate on slabs and the like and coming into the garage. Now, spraying them there is kind of worthless. You just kind of sweep and get rid of them. If you consider you have to treat, I'm not even worried so much about lawns, but typically where we see, if you have a big field next to you with a lot of organic matter, that's where they're migrating from. And at extreme cases, people sometimes will spray a barrier along the edge of their property to basically intercept them out away from the house and kill them before they get in. Normally, if you had to do that, I would say early September. We're late enough now, I don't really see you're going to get much advantage of it. And you might know which side of your property is the most likely to be the source. Sometimes it's real easy. And you know, it's interesting because, you know, in the city where we just don't have that kind of organic matter in our soil or environments, you see a couple millipedes, but you don't get these herds of them. Versus I have seen places where there's just buckets of them coming in, migrating from adjacent ground in particular.
Oh, wow. Nick in Madison. Well, on that happy note, let's go to Nick in Madison. Hi, Nick.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I bought a house a number of years ago, have had the same tenants in for many years. They finally moved out. We've emptied the house. And I stopped in at night, and I was surprised that there was an infestation of cockroaches. And now the house is vacant, and I'm looking to figure out how I'm going to get rid of them.
Okay. Roaches aren't so bad. I mean, you just have to, they're both sprays and baits that you can use, you know, depending what you're more comfortable with. The thing about most of the roaches that we have is they need water. So I would guess that the problem is pretty much in the kitchen, maybe the bathroom. And what you have to do is kind of open up the cupboards underneath the sink and spray back in those cracks and crevices where they're hiding. Or, as I said, you can consider using some of the baits that are out there. It depends on numbers. If you said, you know, when you walked in there, you saw 50 of them, I'd say, boy, I think I would go after and spray. If you saw 4 or 5, then you might consider the baits. Baits take a little bit longer, but I'm guessing there's just not a whole lot of food available, so that would tend to cause cockroaches more likely to be exposed to the baits.
Oh, there you go, Nick. Thank you for calling. And Isaac in Green Bay, we'll go to you. Hi, Isaac.
Hey, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. A number of years ago, I purchased some heirloom tobacco seeds off the internet, and I grew this tobacco. And white flies seem to just gravitate towards this. And I no longer grow tobacco, but I cannot get rid of the white flies that seem to gather under tomato leaves, bee balm leaves, Culver's root. What can I do about this?
Okay, so typically when I hear white flies, I think of a critter that is a greenhouse critter. And it's something you can bring in on transplants, and then once it gets in your backyard, it can go after it. And they love tomatoes. I mean, tomatoes is always on the top of the list. But the thing about white flies in Wisconsin is they're tropical. And so when the winter comes, they die. And so my question would be, how are you introducing them every year to have this kind of problem? If it's on the other hand, there are some fuzzy white aphids and stuff we run into, but typically they don't have the wide host range of plants. So, I mean, it your pattern fits white flies, but what's hard for me to explain is do you get buy transplants in the spring from somebody?
We usually get, tomatoes from a local greenhouse.
Okay, I don't want to point fingers, but to me the source is, I wonder if they've had a white fly problem, and small numbers of white flies are getting transported that way, because as I said, the thing about white flies is undersides of leaves, the adults are what you see flying, but their immature stage is almost a scale-like creature that's attached to the bottom side of the leaves. So it might be worth looking at, if you've got any of those plants still there, is taking them and just seeing if you see these scales. And even after the critters hatch and emerge, there's a little crust-like scale left behind, and that would verify that they're true white flies. And as I said, the only way to explain them in our climate is you keep reintroducing them in the spring from transplants.
Isaac, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Phil Pelletieri, our entomologist, distinguished faculty associate emeritus at UW-Madison, our guest today. You can call in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or email to talk at WPR.org. If you call, we'll get you on pretty quickly. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you along today on WPR News. Larry Mueller with my guest, Phil Pelletieri, as we talk insects. Tomorrow, it's a book club day. The book title is Beyond the Flames, and the author, a retired firefighter from a Milwaukee area, uses his experience in the field to write stories about others who have this important job. We'll also hear about the training it takes to be a firefighter, and then we'll get a preview of the Wisconsin Book Festival. Right now, Insects with Phil. Bob in Solon Springs has a question, so let's go there. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for the topic. Thanks, Phil. I have a question about an insecticide, a natural insecticide that we used to use at my fish camp in Alaska. And it used to be readily available in Seattle and throughout the state of Alaska. And it was really effective on mosquitoes. And it was called Buhack. I don't know if you're familiar with it or not. I don't know if it was sold in Wisconsin. It's been out of business now, I think, for about 15 years. The active ingredient was pyrethrum. And the story was that it all came from some chrysanthemum plant in Africa. And we would take this powder, and they said you could sprinkle it around for various insects and ticks. But what we would do is put it in the little tin on the top of the can and burn it. And you could just watch the mosquitoes in the windowsill die, and even the bottle flies. And now that it's illegal, probably because of health concerns, et cetera, I'm wondering if there's another comparable pyrethrum dust product that could be used in the same way.
Okay, so pyrethrum is not illegal. Pyrethrum is the natural insecticide from chrysanthemums, and although that company might not market it, I can guarantee you can find pyrethrum dust and pyrethrum spray still on the market. The newer chemicals are synthetic pyrethroids. They do not occur in the chrysanthemum, and the problem with natural pyrethrum is it breaks down in sunlight very quickly. And so the chemists have tweaked the chemicals, and now the synthetics last much longer, but have many of the same traits. Very quick knockdown, tend to be relatively non-toxic to everything but fish. Fish have a hard time with it. Now, my question, the burning of it starts to get into some pretty uncharted territory, because I can't tell you what happens. Although, with that in mind, whether you have ever heard of the product Thermocell, which is this little device you put on your belt, and it uses gas heating a coil, and you put a little pad, and it gives off this smoke and the like. That's the same thing, except they're using synthetic pyrethroids instead of natural pyrethrum. In fact, you can even buy units to put on, let's say, a table when you're out eating and the like, and it will have this small cloud of insecticide that knocks things down. And you wouldn't want to use it in an environment where you don't have fresh air. I mean, you see outside, it's much more reasonable. It's not something made for using indoors. But so I think there are products that are very similar and are designed in a way that you don't have to burn them like you did before to get the same effect. And Thermacell is just one brand. There might be other ones, but I know that's one. I spent a lot of time in the fall, or I belong to an archery club, but we're in the middle of a swamp, and we do have mosquito problems. And most of us have these little belt units that we use to try to keep the mosquito numbers down when we're out shooting our arrows. So.
Bob, there you go. Thank you very much for calling. And Mike and Stevens Point, on to you now. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. Give me some advice about how to deal with Asian ladybugs. I have huge infestations that come in this time of the year.
Okay. I can't give you a prediction yet because I just haven't seen enough to know, but we haven't got to the conditions, at least in the Madison area. Historically, what you find is you get the first relatively hard freeze, and it's like you turn a light on. The first good sunny day, the next day, all heck breaks loose. And these things migrate in from large distances. You notice they particularly attack the sunny side of the house. Like so many of these fall invaders, you know, we try to get people to think through, is there something you could seal or adjust? Now, if you got an old farmhouse, that isn't going to be possible. But, you know, when I'd have people call me and say, you know, I get 50 Asian lady beetles every day in my bathroom, but nowhere else, then I start wondering, is the vent fan screened properly? Or is there some physical weakness out there that we could seal up so they can't get access? But in those cases, when they can't be built out, then there are sprays, and again, it's all these synthetic pyrethroids we've talked about, which is the dominant spray in the market. And as far as timing, for some of the early things like cluster flies, the person sprayed in August, that was good. That's way too early for Asian lady beetle. I wouldn't say at least until the 1st of October. And as I said, you're still okay here. I'm wondering in some parts of the north if the season has already started. Again, without running the lab, I don't get statewide calls like I used to, so I can't tell you. But have you seen Asian lady beetles in big numbers around your structure yet today or even this last week?
Yeah, just the last couple of days after we've had a frost.
Okay, yeah, so now, that's, you know, as quick as you can get it on. And your overhangs, the south side up high is where you want to get these sprays on. Again, around particular window frames, if you're a little concerned about those being tight enough, you don't have to spray every square inch, but the whole secret is to knock them down. And you get some as much repellency as kill out of these chemicals, to be honest. But if they don't come in, that's what we're after.
Yep. Good luck, Mike. Thank you very much for calling. And we turn to Bob in Washburn next. Hi, Bob.
Well, good morning. Thank you for talking to me.
Sure.
I'm sitting in my garage here dealing with the gladiola bulbs that I just brought in and thinking about how I could better manage the thrips that are a big problem for me over the summer.
Thrips.
Thrips, notorious little critters. You wouldn't think anything that small could cause a problem, but think of their mouths are little files, and what they do is they rasp the surface of the plant, and if it happens to be flowers and they love flowers, it affects it. To be honest, gladiolas, the thrips associated with it, if I remember correctly, overwinter in the bulbs. So those little stinkers are right there to go and start things. I had a brother-in-law that used to commercially raise them, and he used to literally dust his bulbs when he put them away and stored them, cleaning them up and the like as his first line of defense. Then he would wait into the growing season, and, you know, you watch your plants, and when you see the first sign of thrips, you put treatments on, and there are various treatments you can use. The thing about thrip control on green plants is because the way their life cycle works, you almost got to spray every 5 days for a total of almost 3 sprays to really get the knockdown, because there are life stages that are not susceptible at any given time. And so you have to kind of keep after them to kind of bleed them out. But as I said, I think it'd be worth looking on the internet to see if you can pick up some dusts that are labeled for thrip control in GLADS. And you might consider, you know, storing them with that, and that may be able to shut things down before they get a chance. Thrips naturally have some natural control, but if the numbers start high, then things get really out of hand.
Bob, good luck with that. Thank you so much for calling. Sue in Madison emailed, German wasps have created a nest in the ground next to their back porch, and she's wondering if they will come back and use the same nest the next year.
Generally not. That's not their normal behavior, but what would be a good idea is either this fall or next spring, whatever that opening was, I'd make sure it was sealed so it wasn't available. But it is not their normal behavior in our climate to recolonize a nest. Now, down in Florida, if you want to think about a real nightmare, is their yellow jackets don't necessarily get killed out in the winter. And so the next year, you can have a colony that's 10 times the size of the one from the year before. And that, I can't imagine. It's not real common, but it is capable. But we don't have those kind of problems up here, thank goodness.
Yeah. Fran emailed us. They have a 93-year-old log cabin in northwest Wisconsin trying to control powder post beetles for a number of years. Their current focus is on original white birch staircase. In the past, they've used penetrating on any bark covered with white birch furniture and supports in the cabin. They're now using polyurethane varnish. The question is poly versus penetrate and the best way to apply either.
So one of the ways that they have treated is to basically use, there's a product that's called penetrate that basically is a form of boric acid. And the idea is it soaks into the wood, and when the powder post beetles come out, they feed on it. In order to soak in the wood's got to be open vesseled. So as I said, if it's already painted or sealed, the penetrate won't do what you want it to do, because what it needs to do is soak in the wood, have the crystals there, and become poisonous to anything that eats it. Versus the polyurethane is just a physical barrier. And what my concern is that may slow them down quite a bit. But powder post beetles, if there's ones that are in the wood, you put the polyurethane on the top, it pushes its way out, and honestly, that hole is now an access point for new ones to go in to lay new eggs. They're not near as successful. It definitely slows them up, but that's frustrating for people. And the other thing that's crazy about powder post beetles is sometimes they take as much as 4 or 5 years to come out of the wood after it's treated, the other side of this is the drier things are, the more hostile it will be for them. As the wood ages and dries, it becomes more hostile. But I can't give you a magic date when it gets old enough that it's not susceptible. So, as I said, it may, thinking through, if you're using any of the borate-type treatments, it's got to be able to soak into the wood to be effective. If things are sealed in a way that can soak in the wood, then don't go that direction.
Tom and Ms., one quick last one. Tom from McQuantico emailed, runs in the state forest a lot, and during the heat of August and September, he would get bothered by gnats. What are they going for? Mosquitoes, he understands, but what are the gnats looking for?
Well, there are blood-feeding gnats. I mean, black fly is a classic one, and although most black fly problems are the spring, we do have fall ones. There are also little gnats, no-see-ums and whatnot, which is really a blood-feeding gnat. And again, they're kind of like mosquitoes. I mean, they home in on carbon dioxide and the like, and they're looking for a blood meal. And if you're there, now, if you're a fast enough runner, maybe. But I think that's what it is. And I would guess black fly first would have to see it. No-see-ums are pretty weak flyers, and I don't think they could catch up to you. So,
Phil, on that note, it's always a pleasure. Thanks so much for being with us, and I hope we get the chance to talk again soon. Thanks, Phil.
Bye now.
Phil Pelletieri, entomologist, distinguished faculty associate emeritus at UW-Madison. Well, we are turning our attention next to spiders, and we've got a guy who's spider. I'd call him the Spider-Man, actually. He's done a lot of research, even on spider brains. What do you think about that? We'll talk about the life cycles and a whole lot more about spiders coming up next. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.